play. What's up? Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building. Nigga.
Yeah. It's alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come up. The show goes on.
Doubted we'd ever see it, but here it is. Yeah! The return to glory.
And with that, we welcome you back to the always pressing PGA DFS podcast. We're going to recap the Masters for most of it, I have a feeling, and then we will talk about the RBC Heritage. In order to do so, my co-host is always on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing?
Dude, I'm doing fucking awesome. That was a weekend, dude. I tweeted out earlier because I know a lot of people have deleted the app, but you can still go to masters.com, of course, too, and see it because they, you know, the fucking Masters app. I mean, my God, what an app that was, you know? But if
how the PGA Tour tweeted out today that they're improving their app right now?
Yeah, it was terrible timing. I would have waited probably another month. But either way, so if you go to and you because you could we could watch every single shot by every single golfer this week for the most part. Some of them were in the trees, couldn't exactly see them, whatever. But if you just go and watch that last putt by Tiger, like without that sound, because obviously it's fine for Faldo and Nance to be talking, but if you just go listen to that crowd, my God, what a weekend!
Well, it was pretty good. If I let that keep running, I'll give Nance credit, and I've heard other big-time broadcasters in all sports, like Al Michaels talks about it with the Miracle on Ice after the Do You Believe in Miracles? It's just they leave it silent. They let the moment speak for itself. So it's like you said, with that, with the roar of the crowd, and DJ and other guys were interviewed afterwards and said, we've heard roars on golf courses before. We've never heard Tiger roars, and we heard Tiger roars on Sunday. Like it was, they said they knew every time he did something good because you could just hear the difference in the noise that it made around Augusta. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Did you see where Koepka was on 17, getting ready to hit his tee shot? And that's when Tiger hit into 16.
Yeah.
And almost fucking made it. And everybody on 17 was watching what was going on 16. And that was some insanity. And then, of course, Brooks doesn't even let him finish like cheering. He just pegs it and just rips it down the middle, which I'm sure we'll talk about Brooks. What? But. Dude, what do you say about that? Like, how insane was this past weekend?
It's what we've been wanting to see for since 2005.
Yeah.
14 years, Jesse. 14 years. I started thinking about it today. Like, you know, we listen to No Laying Up and we listen to other podcasts, and I'm not going to go do their thing where they named off all the kind of like, you know, the iPhone wasn't out for two more years before he last won the Masters, stuff like that. They had the whole laundry list of pretty funny things. You think about it, I was thinking about it. I was a third year in college, so I was doing all kinds of stupid things then. And there's Tiger just winning his fourth green jacket. And then I think back how long ago that was and the things I've done from then till now. It's pretty wild. So yes, it's been a long time, and I know we've talked about it. We're always rooting for Tiger, but we were concerned for a while that he wouldn't be there. Not saying he wouldn't win this tournament. We believe he's a better golfer now than he was when we first saw him like a year or so ago after this latest surgery. But there were a lot of concerns we'd never see this again, and getting to witness it was pretty damn amazing.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to sit here and act like I've been on the Tiger train since he came back. Obviously I've been a fan. It's hard. All of us, our age, have been fans. We grew up watching Tiger dominate this sport. So to see his decline was pretty hard. His comeback has been, you're right. It sucked. His comeback has been nothing short of amazing. And I can't sit here and act like I've been a believer the whole time. I mean, I sat on this podcast last week and I said, you know, I'm not going to have any Tiger. I ended up throwing one lineup in with him and Francisco Molinari. Thank God. Cause otherwise it was a train wreck of a week for me on DraftKings. But, yeah, I mean, I've not been on board, but it just seems like he is 100% focused on winning majors. So moving forward, that is something, no matter what his price is on DraftKings, no matter what his odds are, that's something you have to consider. It's like, no matter how good he's been playing up until then, like, he's able to flip the switch now.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting to see how it all goes because, like you said, he's flipped the switch. We were reading things over the weekend. All he practices out there on the range before he starts his round are his clubs going into par threes because he wants to have birdie chances at all the par threes, and his approach shots after his drives will be par three distances. He just has a whole different mindset when he goes out there compared to these other guys that do things differently. And it was pretty crazy because he went there, you know, a week or so early, and all he wanted to do was work on the fifth hole, the one they changed the tee boxes to and everything, and he bogeyed it every freaking round. Like, he was four over on the fifth hole.
Yeah.
And it just makes you wonder, like, okay, if he just plays that at par, he runs away with this thing, essentially.
Well,
it's crazy.
I also think, like, if it's normal Augusta conditions, so if you watched, and I watched a shit ton of golf from Thursday until yesterday afternoon, if you watched most of his golf, most of the golf, the greens were slower because it was wetter. They were about as slow as I've ever seen them at Augusta National. And he was leaving a lot of putts, I'm telling you, dead in the heart, but just short. And I felt like he should have had the solo lead going into the final round. He left on that back nine on Saturday. He left a few shots out there. He played well, but he had some putts dead in the middle that could have fallen. But either way, I mean, he got it done. I didn't expect it. First of all, I didn't expect Molly to collapse. As good as Tiger was, I feel like, and it's hard for me not to really believe that Molly gave that tournament away.
Oh, no doubt about it. Sunday, every Sunday at the Masters at our golf course, we have our Masters tournament where they make the pins insert really tough spots. It's almost like a U.S. Open meets the Masters, that the rough grow out, they do everything. But it's fun because it's individual net, and then you draw a player's name out, and whatever their fourth round score is, you combine the two, and that's how the tournament runs. And we were sitting in the clubhouse, like, we already got loose, and we're watching the Masters well right before we got to. And that was when Molly still had a two-stroke lead. And everyone there, just like this podcast, knows how much of a Molly fan I am. And there's guys there in their Tiger Red and everything. I wore my Tiger Red on Sunday just to have fun with it. And I told them all collectively, I said, Molly's one of the best players in the world. But at the same time, he's never played a Sunday at Augusta with Tiger Woods. That butthole is about to start pinching real big, real fast.
Well,
on that back nine. And it showed. I'm not saying that was real. You could tell when you see, you could read facial expressions. He did not look comfortable.
Yeah. Well, and he was in control. He made one bogey, like, through the first 50 holes of that he played. I don't know. Like, he made one bogey for the first three rounds that he played, I guess, which is just absolutely insane to me. You make one bogey. I don't understand how he doesn't hit enough club on 12. If he hits enough club on 12, we're probably not talking about Tiger Woods. You've got to hit that. If you're not hitting the middle of the green, you've got to hit it long. And if worst case scenario is you take a bogey, and then on 15, man, first of all, they didn't show his layup shot there. I don't have a clue how he ended up way left down there at the bottom with no angle at all whatsoever underneath the tree. Like, how he got there is beyond me. But whatever happens, he then hits a tree and puts it in the middle of that pond, which I've never seen a ball that short on that hole ever. Maybe unless it was Sergio last year when he put like 15 in the pond. But either way, I don't know if it was focus, nerves, whatever. He lost it, and those two double bogeys basically cost him the golf tournament, because if he pars both those holes, obviously we consider him play what ifs all day long, but he's 15 under and he wins it by two shots. So I don't know, man, but it was a fucking hell of a weekend, dude. I mean, it starts with Brooks and Bryson racing out there and me just absolutely tilted because I played zero Brooks, because Brooks looks terrible for the last month. But I mean, it's like him and Molly and Tiger.
Big game hunter.
I'm telling you, him and Molly and Tiger are gonna have to be staples at major championships for the foreseeable future, because both of them, all three of them, excuse me, all three of them are playing and can play to a different level, I think, right now than just about everybody. Now, of course, DJ finishes second. Xander's right there too. If he doesn't start so slow, you know, he's definitely winning or maybe potentially in a playoff or something like that. Still only lost by one shot. And I mean, that leaderboard, dude, I mean, just the fucking golf tournament. You cannot beat that golf tournament. It doesn't matter how many more golf tournaments there will be this year. That's the best golf tournament there will be this year.
Yeah, no, you said it. Molly, Brooks, and Tiger, and then I believe it was Rory and DJ are close as well. It's like those five guys have been in the top of the leaderboard like in every major in the last like 6 to 8 majors or something. Like they are just nonstop finding ways to, you know, top five at worst, top 10. Like they're in contention come the weekend. It's pretty damn impressive. And you mentioned Brooks, and it's just like he shows up for these deals. I'll give Kenny Kim a shout out here. He posted a tweet that I thought was amazing. And he compared Brooks' first 21 major starts to Tiger's first 21. Brooks has 3 wins. Tiger has 4. Brooks has 7 top fives. Tiger had 7 as well. Brooks has 9 top 10s. Tiger had 10. Brooks has 13 top 15s. Tiger has 10. Brooks has 15 top 25s. Tiger has 15 top 25s. They're almost the identical resume, which is terrifying. Yeah. Obviously, Tiger has many other things to go with his resume. But when you talk about people showing up on the biggest stage when it matters most, Brooks is right there. And like you said, the perfect example of how Brooks is not phased was when everyone's watching Tiger shot on 16 and Brooks goes, whatever, while the crowd's still roaring, tees it up and just laces one dead center. Like not a care in the world. Most people's knees would have been shaking knowing you're one shot off the lead or just 2 shots, I think, at that time. Like if he goes and makes a birdie, he's got a great chance here. And he could, and to not care like that is amazing. Like, that shows, like, you know, I don't know about you, but there's certain times if I'm over a birdie putt, my knees are knocking. This guy's freaking just lacing it in the biggest stage in golf.
100%. Like, he has no – nerves are not an issue with Brooks. But, again, what the fuck was he hitting on 12? Was it the wind? I don't know if the wind switched on these guys all of a sudden or whatever it was. But you can't put that ball in the water. Now, he had chances because he just barely missed eagle on 15. He ran that right by the hole after eagle 13, which was a hell of a bounce back after taking double bogey. But yeah, I mean, God, I feel like I played, you know, 72 holes of golf this week. That's how I feel today. Like I'm just mentally drained. But it was, dude. That was just an incredible golf tournament. And of course, Tiger Woods wins it. So.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome because it was like the final leaderboard was amazing. Like all of a sudden, here's DJ kind of quietly sneaking in to tie for second. Xander in second ever Masters right there. Finau was up there. Finau continually just keeps getting better and better in the big fields. One day they'll be there. It's just wild. Every day though, it wasn't even just Sunday's final leaderboard. Every day at the end of the day, like, damn, this is action packed. Like it is loaded at the top, and you know Jason Day makes a run. There's just so many guys there up and down the leaderboard that it didn't really, you know, it's not like certain tournaments we watch, like, who are these guys? Like, this was what you wanted to see, and it was super impressive. With Tiger, you know, he's now have 81 wins. He's one off Snead's record. He's 3 off Jack's major record. He's 1 off Jack's Masters record. But let's have fun with it. Does he get the Masters or the major record?
I mean, at this point, like, I don't know how he doesn't, you know, I mean, if he can keep this up for, you know, five more years,
two tournaments,
you know, if he, right. He's going to Pebble. We got the US Open at Pebble. He's won that one. He smoked the field at that one. If he won it by like,
he set a record at that one
or something. And then Bethpage, like you said, which is coming up in just a little over a month or about a month. And I mean, I don't know that he'll win those two, but he's got a good shot. And you better believe he'll be the favorite going into them. But if he can keep this up for 5 more years, that's the question. Will the back hold up? If his back holds up and he's able to continue to play golf, I think he at least gets to Jack's record there of 18. Now, whether or not another one of those will be the Masters, I think that's just kind of depends on conditions. I mean, conditions were really good for him this week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wouldn't be shocked if he does it. The way he's playing, the way he's focused, the way he's going to take a certain approach to his schedule, he's going to schedule everything around winning the big boys.
Yeah.
So I can see that happening. Let's talk about some other things that took place over the week, and it'll all kind of focused around Tiger at one point or another. But what thoughts do you think went through that security guard's mind when he almost killed Tiger?
So I didn't even see that live. I didn't see that live. I had to saw the replay, but he literally about took Tiger out. Obviously, it was kind of a product of the rain. And I've never seen that golf course that wet before. I went one of the couple times I've went, it's rained. But I don't know, they seem to keep it drier and either way. Yeah. That guy, I'm sure he is just glad that Tiger ended up winning.
Yeah. No doubt about it. Phil Mickelson, the video heard around the world, was one of the best things I've ever seen. I'm assuming you watched Phil talking about Kuchar 0.06% side action and dropping bombs all over Augusta. Did you check that out?
Yeah, it was odd that you're going to call out the guy you're playing with that day like that. Maybe they have that kind of relationship. I don't know.
Where they I'm can pretty sure they have it. That relationship.
I mean, I'm guessing, guess. But
yeah,
that seems kind of like, even if one of my buddies put me on blast like that on the internet and a million people saw it, I'd be kind of pissed off. Like, hey man, fuck you. Mm-hmm. So the bombs, man. Like what? And then he goes and shoots. What did he shoot? Even par on the weekend or something?
Bombs.
Yeah. Yeah. He shot 70, 73. Yep. He shot 200 on the weekend. Like, I mean, he was only a few shots off at that point and he got basically trained. But I mean, yeah, man, Phil, I don't know. I like Phil's social media is good, dude. He's doing social media right, in my opinion.
Yeah, we after the round yesterday at the course, everyone's watching the video laughing about it. And then all of a sudden I had to show him the calf video, how to get successful calves. Phil Mickelson's social media just out of nowhere, and now he's running it or someone's running it for him, whatever. It's amazing. It's probably
I think it's all him, dude. I think he's just got that kind of personality.
I love it.
He has a seriously I don't give a fuck personality, which I can't really blame him. He also thinks he's the smartest person everywhere he goes. I mean, his ego is massive. So, he's doing all this himself. I'm almost 100% sure. But he's also, he's probably also borderline genius.
I think he is because, the stuff he does, the Cavs video, not many other guys have done that. Like, that was just everything's scripted. Like, the practice rounds, he's got $100 bills hanging out of his pockets. And so he's got it all scripted out.
Did you see him flopping shots from the fringe in the tournament play? Like
from the fringe? Yes.
Yeah, he was taking full wide open 64 degrees from the fringe, easily puttable. Just put it on the green. Like, just put it up there. That's all you got to do. And he's taking full swing shots and hitting a flop shot 10 yards and landing it and letting it trickle down. Like, who the fuck does that besides Phil Mickelson?
Phil Mickelson.
Right.
That's who does that. Speaking of the greens, I wanted to ask your opinion on this because I'm starting to get annoyed by it. Are you still okay with that 16, the pin placement on 16 on Sunday that basically it gives you a hole in one if you hit a certain area on the green?
Oh, 100%. Like, well, you've got to hit it. You've got to hit it where you're supposed to. I mean, you're still you can't just it. Just about every single shot that goes in the hole there is hit up to the right and then it trickles down into the hole. It's not like, I mean, maybe people are going right at the flag and they just happen to hit a cut and it lands perfectly and comes in. I don't know. But either way, I think those types of holes are good to have at the end of a golf tournament. That way, the back nine there is so good because it's really difficult starting out. 10, 11, and 12 are hard. Then you have bogey or you have birdieable holes on 13. 14 is sometimes gettable. It was really gettable on Saturday. 15 is always gettable. And then 16 is another hole that you have a good shot to birdie. 17 is okay. And then 18 plays hard. And I think it's a great setup to have a Sunday showdown type of round coming down the stretch.
Okay. Any final thoughts on Tiger? We could probably pick apart a million different things, but any final, like, you know, we have pictures of him back in the day winning with a turtleneck. Now he's wearing with this goofy ass no collared shirt. There's a lot of ways you can do it. You can do the comparison of tugging his dad. We've seen that everywhere. Any final thoughts on El Tigre bringing down the Masters?
No, it's going to be once again good for golf. I mean, I've seen so many tweets and posts from people who don't even give a shit about golf, and they're talking about like, oh, you know, this is going to save golf. Well, golf doesn't need Tiger Woods. Like, golf now does not have to have Tiger Woods, but having Tiger Woods makes golf way better. And so him winning is just going to make this the rest of this year that much more enjoyable, I think, especially because people are going to tune in more and pay more attention.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things that's going to be so big. Like you saw, we know we've heard stories about all these players that grew up watching Tiger, but you see them all on social media. Like Brent Snedeker had a great one, and many others. Brent stood out big time, just like the memories he's giving people. It was pretty – it's just how impressive it is that Tiger – can do all these things. And I've heard way too many people, everyone's got the right to their own opinion. I'm not going to say that, but I've heard a lot of people like saying, how can you like a guy that, you know, did things he did? Hey, we all have skeletons in our closet. We've all screwed up. Like, no one complained that Michael Vick took a football field again. Like, you got to get over things and move on. But to have him back in the way that we grew up watching him was pretty freaking impressive.
Yeah.
So that's fun to watch. I hope we get to see it again. He's won two of the last seven tournaments he's been in. They're small field tournaments, but I haven't even heard that rumbling too much. So I love it. It's absolutely amazing.
I mean, he's not the perfect person. And, you know, we're never going to get a perfect person that's going to be that great at what they do. Everybody has flaws.
Would they complain if DJ won after what he did?
I mean, most people don't know what DJ's done. Most people don't know.
Like,
Tiger is on a different level because – and I highly recommend it. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to the Trap Draw podcast. We've talked about this before, on Tiger Woods, and they talk about everything that happened basically from Thanksgiving of that year that he wrecked a car up until last year. They talk about everything and some of the things you forget about. And I can't wait. I'm gonna listen to it again because it's incredible where he's come since then. I mean, he has not won a major since 2008. That's 11 years. The last major he won was the U.S. Open in 08. No. Yep. Yeah. The U.S. Open in 08. And at that point, he was a shoe-in to win, to beat Jack Nicklaus's record. And of course, you know, 11 years later, here we are. So, no matter what he's done in his personal life or whatever, like, I just appreciate him for what he's done for the game of golf. And he's the reason that we have Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson and a lot of these guys. And that's the reason that they're so good is because of Tiger Woods.
Yep. 100% on board with that. I was trying to avoid the whole thing, but I heard it so many times today. It annoyed the crap out of me. Like, I really, people trying to play holier than thou. It just blows my mind. It's like, it's the whole saying when you have, like, basically, what is it? When you can have thrown at you, you throw the first stone or whatever, something like that.
Stones if you live in a glass house or something along those lines. Basically, man, nobody's fucking perfect, you know. I mean, get over it.
Exactly. Like, enjoy it for what it is. Stop trying to find the negative in every situation because you can if you want. Just enjoy how awesome it was. Like, absolutely awesome. 100%. But, yeah, we could talk about this for a while, and I have a feeling when we do a recap show at the end of the year like we did last year, this might take up a good portion of the recap show. 100%. So we'll probably revisit the whole freaking thing. It was pretty awesome, and maybe by then I'll learn how to edit in better clips than using my phone next to a microphone. But it was awesome. Like, I even tweeted it last night. I think I watched that same clip like at least a dozen times. Like, I just played it over and over and over again just because the pose, it's like just everything about Tiger was awesome. But all right, let's go to the 2019 RBC Heritage over in Harbortown. Small course, awesome field though for what this tournament is and what it's now become. Jesse, why don't you give us some past event history for the RBC Heritage?
Yeah, this is I don't remember it being this strong of a field last year. I could be wrong, but some of these winners, man, it's just like either the field wasn't strong or the guys that are in the field that played last week seriously don't give a shit. I don't know, but either way, Satoshi Kodaira won last year, 12 under, in a playoff against Siwoo Kim. The 2017 champion was Wesley Bryan, his first and only win ever. 13 under, one shot over Luke Donald. Brandon Grace won the 2016 edition of this, 9 under, two shots over Luke Donald and Russell Knox. And then Jim Furyk's won this twice. Kuchar's a past winner. Snedz is a past winner. It's a Pete Dye track, so it's some people love it, some people hate it, and you're going to talk about it.
Yep. Harbortown Golflings over there in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Got 132 golfer field, a little shorter than normal, but still 70 make the cut, top 70 in ties. This has been a host event since 69 Pete Dye course. It's on along the ocean. As that'll come into play through a lot of narratives you hear. It's not a long course. Like I said, it's 7,100 yards, par 71, shortest course on the PGA Tour. It has a lot of trees around the fairway, a lot of trees. It has 54 bunkers, 17 water hazards. It's a driving accuracy course, less than driver course, but you have to be very accurate, and you have to be accurate not just to be in the fairway, but where you're going to be at in the fairway. Some of these trees overhang into the fairways. You need the right angles into the greens because these greens are the smallest greens on tour. They're average 3,700 square feet, super small. So a lot of around the green is going to come into play because if you're missing greens, you're going to have to get up and down to save par. It is the top. It is in the bottom 10% eagle and bottom 15% of birdies on the PGA Tour. So scoring is a premium here. Par is very, very good if you can hit greens, though. So driving accuracy, good approach shot in, good game around the green. You can be very, very successful here. It is going to be really, really windy. It gets up to about 15 miles an hour on Thursday, but Friday it's supposed to be stormy. Chances of rain, showers, 25-mile-an-hour winds is what I saw earlier on something I was reading. It's going to be pretty nasty. It calms down over the weekend. The rains go away. Winds get back down to kind of normal 8 to 12-mile-an-hour things. But Friday is going to be nasty. It's either going to be really important to get the right draw or – how does that all work? Because it'll play differently for different golfers. So it's going to be literally the luck of the draw and how that weather comes into play. So we're going to have to keep that in mind. So join us in the Fantasy Sports Degens Slack chat, which is free. And we'll talk about that closer to lock time and get more questions in here. For Masters Week, the Slack chat was hopping. It was going crazy. Let's keep it going. So it's not just a major. It's every week. Make all that happen. But Harbortown, fun course. But got to be very, very, very accurate here. What key stats are you looking at, Jesse?
Yeah, a lot of the accuracy stats, like you talked about, green regulation, driving accuracy. I do have par five scoring on here. I think you can look into, like, obviously Pete Dye specialists, if you want to, on Fantasy National, dive into some more course history stats on as far as that goes. But that's pretty much it for me. It's accuracy stats.
Yeah, no, that's what it's going to come down to. Let's talk some FanShare Sports as we get into this. Coming in good form, top three draft or top drafting scorers in the events on average. To no surprise of many, the Italian stallion Francisco Molinari is averaging 133 DraftKings points in his last three. You got Cooch, Kisner, Graham McDowell coming in hot after that W a couple starts ago. Kokrak, Sungjae, Charlie Hoffman, Mackenzie Hughes, and Connors. If you want to go back to tournaments, you get a lot of the similar guys, though. You got Molly, Cooch, Kiz, but DJ gets up there. He's fourth. Fleetwood's up there, sixth. Poulter, seventh. Good course history here for Ian Poulter. Jonathan Bird and Jimmy Furyk make out part of the top 10. If you just go back to overall draft scoring on the Heritage events from 2015 to 2018, ever since DraftKings was around. Most of these guys, like Brandon Grace, has played in three. He's averaging almost 90 DraftKings points. Cantlay is averaging 88.5, Siwoo 87. Kisner's played in all four on that track, almost 82 DraftKings points. So some of these course history, course horse guys, one thing I like about FanShare is being able to go back to those tournaments and really check it out. I mean, if you talk Pete Dye design guys, past 20 Pete Dye courses. DJ's played 12 of the last 20, averaging almost 84. Cooch has played on all 20 of them. He's averaged almost 80 DraftKings points. He loves Pete Dye courses. Jordan Spieth's averaging 78, so not bad. Like Molly's averaging 75, Kisner 74. So some of these guys, you can go farther down the list, really like them, some Pete Dye courses. So something to keep in mind when you break all that down as well. Any final thoughts before we get into DraftKings pricing, Jesse?
Nope.
All right, let's do this. We got five guys over 10K, DJ at 6, Molly at 11.3, Xander at 10.9, Bryson at 10.4, and Cooch at 10,000. Really solid as you'd expect up here. Where are you going?
Yeah, I mean, I think DJ might be a somewhat like contrarian play this week. Obviously played the Masters last week. Top price on the board. Course history is not great. He did finish 16th here last year, but in 2009 and 2008, he missed the cut. So basically three appearances, he's made one of three cuts. But obviously finished second at the Masters, sixth at the Valspar, fifth at the Players' Championship, won the WGC Mexico. He hasn't finished outside the top 10 since February. So top 10 in his last five starts, including a win. I think he's the kind of contrarian play. I do like Bryson this week. Third year last year, missed cut the year before, and fourth in 2016. He seems to basically like this place, obviously. Kuchar is another play. He'll be super popular. I'll leave the Franny take up to you because I don't get him right. I really want to play him, but I'm just not sure what if I should or not. So what do you think?
I love Franny. I think he's a great play this week. If you want to be super contrarian, I'm not sure I'm going to find my way to an $11,300 Franny. If I go that high, I almost want to just go DJ because you're going to need one of those two guys to win, and I think DJ could win here. Even though Franny's such a great iron player, like everything I said about accuracy and off the tee and the approach game, this is Franny to a tee. So it's a tough spot for me for a guy that loves him so much. But I'm just not feeling them this week, if that makes any sense. I believe it's – if I'm looking at it right here with Molly, he's made the last three cuts here, 49th, T22, T45. That's not going to cut it at 11-3. And I know this is a different golfer than the past. We've talked about it. He's proven it time and time again. He'll be extremely low-owned up top here. Like the takes I just gave you about not paying 11-3 for Franny is what's going to happen.
Which is why I want to play him because, like, you know, I was anti-Franny last week because of his course history and he, you know, basically should have won the thing. So, you know, if that's the case this week, then I would like to play him. So I guess it'll come down to kind of a weather draw, but also, you know, tags on FanShare as well.
Yeah, Wednesday night will be big because I'm with you there. If he does come in super low owned, like, I wouldn't be shocked if he's less than 5%. Like, I really think all the way top, people are going to go straight to DJ or they're going to drop down. Like, I could see that, like, just they're not going to pay for Franny. So, and the weather draw, like you said, is going to be really, really important this week. I usually don't pay too much attention to it, but it looks nasty, like nasty, nasty. So, I'm with you there on Franny. I think DJ is a great play. He's a great play pretty much every week. And he's just quietly keeps getting it done. Like, you kind of saw him here and there over the weekend, but next thing you know, he's T2 and it's all said and done. He was one of only like four golfers under par every day. Like he quietly does his thing. It's DJ at his finest.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. But for me, it's like I like Xander. I like him a lot. But I think Bryson at 10-4 is a really, really nice play. He might be pretty popular here. Like you mentioned his course history already. You got to be very creative out here on this course. I think that fits his wheelhouse. And then Kuchar, like if you're playing cash games, just start it with Kuch. Again, it's not as safe if the weather draws there, but if all things considered, Cooch loves this course. He loves Pete Dye courses. He's made 14 to 15 cuts here. His last five, T23, T11, T9, fifth, and first. He is a monster at this course. So Cooch at 10,000, really, really good play, really, really good cash game play, and doesn't eat up all your salary like going up the mall or DJ. So Cooch, I like him for GPPs as well, but for cash, just you know, put him in there and move on. All right, 9K, got some fun ones here. You got Cantlay, who had a big Masters weekend as well. Good course history here. Spieth at 95, Furyk at 94, Webb at 93, Tommy at 92, Kiz at 91, Siwoo at 9,000. Before I say anything else, did you see Tommy Fleetwood flipping off his putt that he missed?
I did, yeah. I was really surprised that he did not play better.
I love that man. I love him.
Last week, he shot 1 under, 1 under, 2 under, 2 over, and he just did not putt well at all. Didn't make anything. Is couldn't scramble. I think everybody is playable in this range. I'm just going to go ahead and say like all of them. I think Spieth might be the kind of GPP play. 11th, 12th, and 9th in his last three appearances here. Now it's 2015, 14, and 13. So I don't know how much you really want to rely on that, but either way, you know, 21st last week at the Masters, he had a terrible first round. He shot 3 over and then came back and shot under par the next 3 days. He's talked about how close he is. He feels like he's in his game, and people will just talk shit about him all week. And so I feel like he's kind of the, if there is a sneaky GPP play in this region, then it's him. I think that ownership in this range will kind of even itself out because there are some pretty popular plays in this range. Webb Simpson's another guy who I think is very playable, especially after how he played last week. Tommy's a wild card to me. He's never played here and did not have a good showing. But before that, he was playing well, and I was really high on Tommy going into last week, obviously, as well as Paul Casey and Justin Rose, which we didn't even fucking mention in our recap that they missed the cut.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Especially with Rose bogeying the last 2 holes. And then Casey just never had it. I don't know what the fuck was going on with Paul Casey last week, but I know he screwed. Do what?
Wasn't he, what, he finished 10 over like that?
Something like that. I mean, it was close to like last. He got beat by like all kinds of old guys. So, we'll talk about Paul Casey in the future whenever he plays again, but all these guys are playable. Siwoo is going to be popular. I don't see Kisner not being popular as well. He finished second here, I think, in that playoff to Jim Furyk in 2015, if I'm correct. Yeah. No. It was Brian Davis. Anyways, no. That was 2010. Yeah, 2015 he finished second place in a playoff to Furyk. Yep. So I like Kisner quite a bit as well. So, like, the plays here, like GPP-wise, I put Spieth up there, but otherwise Kisner, Webb Simpson, and Cantlay are like my three kind of favorite plays here. I don't know if I can – what do you think about Jim Furyk at that price?
I honestly think he's a cash game play just because I expect him to consistently put it in play, keep it straight, make his pars, nothing flashy. Like GPP, I don't see the upside there. But just the consistent play, like his last 5 tournaments, 23rd, 17th, 18th, 2nd, and 9th. He's playing in really good form. Short courses are perfect for guys like Furyk if it's his game. I don't pick him in a GPP to contend and win, but, you know, I could see a T20. And if he T20 with T20 is in his possibilities.
All right.
Other guys, I like Cantlay with you as well. Webb and Kisner would be the other three. You kind of hit on them all. The one I want to see ownership-wise, if Rahsaan comes alone, which I highly doubt he will because Pat Mayo will be in love with him, is Siwoo Kim. I think he Pete Dye specialist. He loves this course, finished second year last year, and plays all the Pete Dyes pretty well. He's coming in good form as well. But I'd rather, you know, Cantlay, Webb, and Kisner, just like you, those would be the three I'd be circling around here. I like Cantlay quite a bit. I'm just worried he's going to be a little more popular than expected. Really good performance last week at the Masters. And then I go Cantlay, Kisner, then Webb would be the way I'd rank those three in order of my lineup building when I put it together. All right, 8K range. You got Billy Ho at 89, Kokrak at 80, Charles Howell at 87, Poulter at 86, Fitzpatrick at 85, Sungjae at 84, Binion at 82, Moore at 81, and Leishman at 8,000. Pretty interesting AK range pretty interesting range. What's your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of playable guys here too. Kokrak's intriguing. He's not had a whole lot of success around here, but I feel like he's playing better now. In 16, 15, and 14, he did finish 6th, 18th, and 12th. He's had 2 missed cuts since then, so the last 2 years he's been here, he's missed the cut, but I feel like he's playing better this year. I'm an $8,800. I'll play him. Poulter, I feel like, will be kind of, and maybe I'm completely wrong about this, but sneaky, he might be chalky. I don't know. Either way, $8,600. I like him quite a bit. 7th, 11th, the last 2 years here, and obviously made the cut last week. Finished 12th at the Masters. He was in contention for a little while. Hasn't missed a cut since the Dell Technologies Championship back in September. Fitzpatrick is interesting to me. So he's kind of a, like, if he's high on chalk, like, he would be a fade to me. But if he's not, then I think he'll be a good play at $8,500. One thing about Fitzpatrick in the past, he said this is his favorite place to play. And the year that he said that, he missed the cut. So since then, you know, he last year he finished 14th, and he had a pretty good showing on the weekend at the Masters. Well, actually, all three rounds except for the first round. He shot six over and then backed that up with five under and then four under and then two under last week. So a pretty good showing for Fitzpatrick there. I think Sun Jag will be popular again at $8,400. I don't like him around the sand. He just scares me. And then Ben On, again, he'll be popular as well. He finished seventh here last year. So, I mean, those are – like, Ben On is borderline cash for me. Sung Jae, he's probably an ownership fade for me. And then I do, like I said, like Fitzpatrick and Poulter with some Kokrak. So, just basically the whole entire region.
It's hard to fade Kokrak with his consistent form. He's played – you know, he's missed his last two cuts here prior to that. So, 6th, 18th, and 12th, as you were mentioning. So coming in really good form at $8,800, I definitely like going to that realm there. If you kind of want more of a cash game play, but maybe not the upside, Charles Howell the third makes his cuts here and it gets pretty good. I don't mind that. But I'm with you. I like Plotkin, and I'm scared about the chalkiness of what could happen. Coming in outstanding form. He's made all eight cuts here, T7, T11 the last 2 years. I love Poulter 86. He's going to be one of my staples. I'll be different elsewhere if I have to. I really like Poulter. I'm hoping Sun Jae kind of takes some of the potential ownership away from him, because I'm with you. I like Sun Jae a lot. We like Sun Jae, but he's been talked about a ton already. Like, he was talked about on Saturday going into this week. I want to play Sun Jae so bad, and maybe for the right reasons, but I can't go there. Benny On is a great play at $8,200. Going to be very, very popular as well. But, you know, T7th here last year, really likes playing the Pete Dyes as well. And then one other guy that wasn't mentioned, but it's an interesting play to me, especially if the wind gets nasty, Brendan Grace. He's made 3 of 3 cuts here. Didn't play here last year, but T11, a first, a T7. So the 3 years he's played here, he loves playing ocean course. He plays good in the wind and ugly weather. I think Brendan Grace is an interesting play at $8,300 and could be some kind of ownership difference in between Benny On and Sun Jae there. So I like Kokrak, but my favorite two here is Poulter and Grace is where I'm going to be kind of living in this 8K range. All right, 7K, Jesse. I'm not going to read them all, but 7,500 and above, who are you looking at?
The two plays for me there would be Glover and Knox. Glover's made four straight cuts here and two straight top 15s on tour. I mean, if he's not missing the cut, like this year he's top 15ing easy. So, but like every time he's popular, man, he just gets – like it's like he has the weight of the DFS world on his shoulders and he misses the cut. But anyway, I like Glover at 7,800, and then Russell Knox, who's, you know, been a runner up here in the past. He's shown some signs of life of late as far as playing better than he has, at least over the previous year. So I like those two in this range above everybody else. This is a good range, but it's you know, kind of pick your poison, obviously, like just about like it is every week.
Definitely. I'm with you there. For me, Cam Smith at 79 is a guy I'll go back to. You know, he's 51st, 61st, 56 his last three events, but he kind of falters over the weekend. He comes out playing really good golf. Eventually, it's going to get put together. He's made all three cuts here, including a 32nd and 29th. The last 2 years, didn't play than a T15. So in a GPP, I think Cam Smith at 79 is very, very interesting this week. I like the Glover take and Knox as well. Knox, a very good iron player, good course form at this event. So those two guys I have my eye on. And then another one I'm going to watch for ownership. If RCB comes in low-owned, he has my attention. Coming in decent form, 36, 24, 30th, his last three events. He's only played here once 2 years ago and missed the cut. But this is a new RCB to me. This is a very different RCB. I'm not sure this course is the best fit for him, but at the same time, I think he can make it work. The Euros are really good with these kind of iron play, non-driver type courses. So RCB's seen a lot of courses, I guess, over in Europe. At $7,600, I will give him a shot, especially if ownership dictates things correctly. Who do you like below 7,500?
I'll start with Grillo. He showed a little bit of life last week. He did not play that great, but he did make the cut. Of course, 87% of the players made the cut, or just about everybody made the damn cut. Either way, he finished 18th here last year, so I think he's all right at $7,400. I'm not completely in love. Hadwin's another guy who's made the cut here in his last two appearances, so 22nd and 30th, going back to 17 and 16, but has two straight miscuts on tour. So you could probably catch him at some low ownership if you want to do that. Eddie Pepperell's another guy who I kind of find intriguing. I don't know if this course necessarily fits him, but made the cut at the Masters again. Everybody made the cut at the Masters. Finished third at the Players' Championship, which is another Pete Dye course, right? Yeah.
Yep.
So Pepperell at 72, he's got my attention. Probably do a little bit more digging on him, but either way, I don't mind him, and I don't know, obviously, I don't know how popular he will be, but since no course history, you know, I think that kind of holds it back a little bit. So I think he's intriguing at 72.
Yeah, I'm with you on Eddie. $7,200, very, very intriguing to me. You mentioned he played well at a Pete Dye course, the PGA Championship. We've seen him show up at a lot of these kind of weird tournaments, and he comes out of nowhere. You know, 51st, 56th, the last 2 weeks, and a third before that. First time here, but pretty good Euro player. And we remember, who could ever forget the he got so hammered the night before the final round of the British Open and shoots like 6 under.
Right.
So Pepperell's always got an interesting place in my heart. Grillo at 74, 100% on board with you there. This guy continues to kind of, to me, I know they're not the same person, but he's like my mini RCB. He's just kind of always a little lower price, but still a very good ball striker. A T16 here last year. A couple other guys I'm not sold on just yet, but I want to dig in on some more. So I want to throw them out here as just somebody to keep in mind. Alexander Noren is down to $7,000. I know he's not playing great golf.
It's God, first time he has played some shit golf recently, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, really bad. But for a guy of his talent level, it's like GPPs at 7K. That is freaking crazy.
No, when I saw that price, I was kind of surprised. I'm with you as far as like pedigree wise, but his form coming in. But no, again, should horrible. Be. I'm with you. Like a GPP low own play with some hypothetically high upside, I could get behind Alex Noren.
Yeah, it's like you get chalky up top in the eights or the nines, and you want to be different with a guy that can still contend in top 10. Noren's the guy. Like, he could easily miss the cut, but he's got such talent that, you know, if he finds it, it's going to be big. So I think he's interesting as well. But yeah, 7K, very, very interesting range here. All right, let's dip down to the realms of the 6K, where there's a lot of interesting pricing down here. We can make cases for a lot of guys, Jesse. Give me some of the ones you're looking at down here.
I mean, I would start with maybe potentially Bill Haas. He finished seventh here last year, missed the cut the year before, 14th and 31st in the 2 years prior. He's coming off a 13th at the Valspar Championship. So $6,900, maybe a bit of a play there, obviously GPP only. Chez Reavie's another guy. Like, he doesn't have a whole lot of success at this golf course. But just looking at kind of some particular stats in relation to the golf course, he's got some decent numbers. Form coming in is not great again, but again, another guy for GPP. Chris Kirk is another guy who plays well, at least around here. 55th missed cut, 23rd, 69th, 27th, 30th, going back to 2013. He showed some signs at the Arnold Palmer, I believe. Semi-recently, he's got two straight missed cuts, but either way, I think he's, you know, he's got a little bit of my attention. What about Cameron Champ down here at
coming off an injury?
Yeah, I mean, coming off an injury, but, you know, I mean, at $6,500, you want to talk about some upside. The guy has shown that he can win on the PGA Tour now. Of course, that was the Sanderson's Farm Championship back in October, but either way, nobody hardly, I don't think, will be on him at $6,500. There's a lot of salary savings there. I'm going to throw one more guy at you. It's Mark Anderson. He is $6,100. Web.com guy. He played here in 2017. He finished 44th. 2014, he finished 68th. And in 2012, he finished 13th. He did win on the web.com back in February. He's not played since February 10th, at least that I have stats for, which is kind of weird to me. But either way, $6,100, you know, a guy who potentially make the cut and maybe top 40 and, you know, pay off.
Opens up a lot of salary too. There's a lot of different guys I could look at down here, depending on how you want to go. I'm not going to name them all. Like, if you come in the Slack chat, I'll name them all for you. But like, Pat Kizire is coming in actually pretty decent form at $6,700. A good week at the Masters, T18. He's made three straight cuts. I missed a cut here last year. They're probably at 32nd and 14th. So at $6,700, he's interesting to me. You didn't mention him, but I know you're usually on him. What's your thoughts on Wyndham Clark?
Yeah, actually, forgot about my boy. He's never played around here. I think he's all right for a GPP, but I mean, he's been hitting a lot of greens, and if he can just get the putter going, his driver is a little bit wonky, so I'm not completely sold on him. Obviously, this is a lot of less than driver holes on this golf course, so maybe he can keep it in play a little bit more, but his accuracy off the tee scares me a little bit.
All right. After him, the defending champion, Kadira, is $6,400. He's made three straight cuts on tour. Yes, he's not the most consistent golfer, but if you can finish first at this event, it means you know the course a little bit. I'll throw that out there. Just going to throw that on a limb. So $6,400, not the worst punt in the world. He'll probably be chalky for that exact reason. But my boy continues to get disrespected. Rory Sabatini at $6,400 finished 23rd here last year. He's made 6 of 9 cuts, 3 top 10s, and he's just continually making cuts on the PGA Tour. So $6,400 for Sabs, same kind of thing, and get you T40, T35 pretty consistently. I got a couple questions. I got one more question for you. T23rd last week. He's made 2 or 3 cuts here. Missed the cut last year, T59 and a 68. So not great finishes, but our boy HV3 is $6,300, Jesse.
Yeah. You know, for I don't mind him. I don't know that I'll play him, but I mean, DJ Trahan's right there too. The guy who was pretty chalky for his price tag at the Texas Open, he missed the cut. So, a couple guys there that could be playable.
Yeah, the 6K range is definitely interesting. So, definitely a range when you come in and we talk weather and ownership and stuff on Wednesday or even tomorrow if you want. The 6K range, we can go back and forth on a lot of things here. I'm not going to name them all off, but you can make a case for a lot of these guys in GPPs. I wouldn't really feel comfortable down here in cash with many of them, but GPPs, you can make some hay. So I don't mind that at all. All right, let's recap it real quick. Jesse, we'll rapid fire this. Who's your number one play 10K and above?
Bryson.
Yep, Bryson is mine as well. Who's your number one play in the 9K range?
I'm going to go with Kisner.
Damn it. I was going to go Kisner, so I'll take Cantlay to make a difference. So we don't go the same again. I think
I'll be the same.
No, there's nothing. So, okay, Kisner for me too then. give me two guys in the 8K range.
I'm going to go a little bit different on this. I'm going to go Kokrak and Poulter.
I'm going to go Poulter and Grace. So right now, if you're paying attention at home, it's Bryson, Kisner, and Poulter. We're all the same on. So,
yep.
Buyer beware. 7K range. Give me like 3 guys.
Glover, Knox, and Pepperell.
I'm going to go Cam Smith, Glover, and Griot. That's my 3 there. Then who's your one? If you had to play one guy in the 6K, who's the one guy you'd play?
If it's one guy, I'm going to say Bill Haas.
Sorry, you're breaking up there. Who's your one guy?
Bill Haas.
Bill Haas. All right, mine would be Rory Sabatini. GPP play, give me 3 GPP guys you start a GPP lineup with.
So I think Kokrak is definitely in there. Poulter, and then I'd probably be looking, because if you do that, that leaves you what? 81, Glover.
In my three, I'd start with Cantlay, Cam Smith, and RCB. That'd be my three GPP plays to start it off. Maybe throw in some Norton for fun after all that discussion. Give me three guys to start a cash lineup with.
Man. I see what you're talking about with Furyk. I don't necessarily mind him. I do like Kisner quite a bit at $9,100. I would put him in there. I think Ben On at 82 is borderline cash worthy. So, like, pretty much cash worthy because everybody's kind of borderline to me. And then Tommy Fleetwood at $9,200. It's hard for me to see him missing the cut this week. Of course, it's hard for me to see Paul Casey and Justin Rose missing the cut last week. But
Justin Rose. That was so tilty, man. Yeah, the Slack chat was tilted. Our personal text messages were tilted. That was something special. My cash starts, it'd be Kuchar, Kisner, Poulter. I like that start quite a bit. All right, pick to win. Jesse, give me one and then one longer shot. Not doesn't be super deep, but give me two picks.
Kisner?
Yep, that's who I had down. He's 25 to 1.
Those are odds though. Ooh, 25 to 1 on Kisner.
Are we gonna have the same OAD pick again?
We might. It's very possible.
In that direction.
What about Pepperell? I don't know if he can win, but
he'll have good odds though. I was looking at him earlier. He's 100 to 1.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, he's an interesting $5 on
interesting T20 guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you could get a top 20, you'd probably get him, what, at 10 or?
Yeah, 10 to 15 probably, I'm guessing. Yeah, I got Poulter at 41 and Cam Smith at 55 to 1. A couple I'd look at as well. Cam's going to win this year. I know he's going to win. I have very, very good. I'm kind of torn, though. Is it going to be him or Finau first? That's the million-dollar question.
But surely it's Finau. Surely it's Finau. So. But I'm with you. I mean, Cam Smith – I played him some last week too, so I mean he played all right. He didn't play very good Sunday, but
yeah, he's a GPP player, not a cash player. He's got that boomer bust mentality.
Yep.
All right, that'll wrap us up this week. Jesse, final thoughts on the Masters, Tiger, RBC Heritage. Final thoughts.
I don't have much except for we're 4 weeks or so away from being into the next major, so we don't have to wait that long, which is pretty fucking awesome. And I'm just mentally drained. Other than that, man, watch the weather and good luck this week.
Yeah, join us in the Slack chat. We'll help you out with all of that. It was an awesome week at the Masters. Look forward to more and more of that. But if you give us a rating and review on iTunes, we much, much appreciate it. And all that being said, the podcast is on Twitter at AlwaysPressDFS. Jesse is at DFS Golf Gods, and I am at BDintric. Thanks for listening to the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast previewing the 2019 RBC Heritage. Catch you guys next time.